Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome everyone to John Talk Radio tonight. This is our Wednesday night edition on the 10th day of June. My special guest tonight is Michael Grimm. Michael, welcome to the show.
How are you doing, John?
Doing good. Michael has his new release. Yeah, it's great to have you on. Michael's new release, Grimm, will be available. Its release date is June 15th, if I'm not mistaken. I believe that's right.
That's right.
Yeah. And you can pre-order it now on your website? Is that correct?
I believe so, yes. My wife knows better than I, but yes, that sounds correct. I think there are pre-orders on the website.
Well, that's good. And Michael's website is michaelgrimmusic.com for the listeners out there, Michael, that want to see what's going on and what's going on in your career right now. We really appreciate you taking your time to be on tonight. Our show, one of the things that we like to do, and through the different interviews that we've done, is, you know, this is in podcast form right after the show, and people can listen to it. And they can listen to Michael Grimm's music, but we want them to know a little bit about you and some things. You know, for me, Michael, the best thing about doing these interviews is getting to know all these different musicians and getting everybody has a story. And you being a songwriter, you know, the gift that you have to write songs, you're able to chronicle your life and some of your songs, which is an amazing thing to do. So, it's one of the things where I think it's like, I think if you can do that, you think, well, maybe everybody can, but it's such a special thing.
It's a struggle for me. I appreciate you saying that, but I'm a singer, you know, first and foremost, and still trying to get that down. And writing is something I feel like I've been forced to have to do in this career. I've been doing it my whole life, but some of the best material that I like personally of the songs that I write are ones that I collaborate with really great writers. And that song, Black and White, is one of those songs I'm very proud of. I wrote that with Kevin Hunter, great songwriter.
Well, that's a really awesome song. Can you talk about that a little bit? Just for the listeners, I always like the backstory if there's something around that song, because it's got some pretty heavy lyrics to it.
Well, you know, the song, is talking about a girl that can't see things, I guess that clearly. So she commits suicide, and, you know, in the end, it's a bad outcome. It's just an example of what Kevin and I were talking about in a conversation one day, which inspired the song. And that was we were talking about how some of these photographers will make things in black and white, you know, and in these photographs, and they're beautiful that way. And I was questioning why is that? I guess it's the simplicity, you know. We both agreed that life is a little more complicated when it has color to it, you know, and that's the way life is. You know, it's not as simple as just black and white. But that inspired the song, and wrote it over 10 years ago with Kevin. We started on the idea. Yeah.
Now, did you write the music, and did you collaborate with the music and the lyrics, or how did that work, Michael?
I always try to start something off, you know, and I'll give some lyrics. If they work, they work. If they don't, they don't. I mean, he and I will just sit together, and he's a real lyricist, and he can fill in the blanks definitely, and he writes, you know, a good portion of this stuff. I mean, he's a real deep poet, just the way he naturally thinks, you know. He's also there to tell me, you know, when things sound good, you know, where I get very, you know, critical, you know, on myself and what I'm writing, you know. So it's good to have that collaboration from someone that you trust, like I do with him.
Yeah, that's incredibly important, because when, you know, you have something in a song or something that you would see as being personal, or you know, as songwriters and musicians say, Michael, it's like their baby, and then they have to share it with other people. And sometimes it's not easy for people to take constructive criticism or things like that. But if you find somebody like you're talking about with Kevin that you really trust his opinion, that's an amazing thing.
It is. Well, you know, I mean, in my career, in my life, I've realized a long time ago that, you know, a lot of people think, you know, these artists do it all by themselves. Of course they don't, you know. I have wonderful people I surround myself with in my life and in my career that help me achieve the image, the sound.
Now,
And
when
they play a
you
big part in it.
Yeah, well, let's talk about I want to get into like how things got started, but let's talk about that part of it. Now, on the latest release, Grimm, when you were putting this together, talk about some of the musicians that you used, and did you have a producer? Did you self-produce this?
I produced this with Masterpole, who also engineered it with me. He and I were in the studio, I'd say just about every day, putting in some time, did two albums worth of material. We did it at my dear friend Jimmy Borden's studio called Studio 824, and he didn't put, you know, any money on the clock, you know, so that really helped. The musicians that we used, I was introduced to Drew Masterpole at the beginning of this project 8 months ago, and he introduced me to some musicians that he wanted to include on the project, and those guys wound up being members of my current band now. Great musicians. Drew Masterpole, who co-produced this with me, engineered it, also played drums. He plays drums in my band, and he's now taken over musical director of my band. So, you know, there are two other guys, Colin Hotchkiss on bass guitar, great bass guitar player and singer, and a very talented guy from, you know, Berkeley, you know, and Carlos Guerrero on lead guitar. He's one of those genius tone freaks. He has a pedal board that look like, his pedal board looks like it can get up and fly away, you know. but the thing is, yeah, is he knows everything about that board, and all of those effects that you hear in the tracks are coming from most of them are definitely not synth tracks, but rather his own inventions, you know, he put on there.
Now, how it can't be an easy thing, Michael, you know, to find musicians that fit what you want, because, you know, at the end of the day, it's Michael Grimm's sound, it's your sound, it's your name, and you have to find people that represent that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you always look for somebody that's going to do that, or is sometimes, Michael, do you look for somebody that may push things out a little bit and make the sound a little different? Because some people will think, well, I want to keep it in this little box of sound, this Michael Grimm box, but you bring in other musicians and people that it may just
mm-hmm.
grow.
And that's exactly what happened with Carlos Guerrero, the lead guitarist. You know, he brought in that sound that we were working a good 3 or 4 months on the album there, and wasn't really getting the sound. Like, what is the sound of this album, you know? And then he brings in, you know, this bassman and the way he plays you know, one of those Fender bassmans, it just made the sound of the album all of a sudden. And normally I don't do that unless somebody I know and trust and look up to in this business wants to put their creative opinion forth, you know. I want anyone to express themselves, you know. I work with great musicians. I've been blessed to work with some of the best, and since I've been out here in Vegas in 2001, I arrived, and I just got to work with the best in the West.
Now, you were talking about how that you're pretty critical when it comes to laying down tracks, and I can understand that. Is there a point, Michael, in the recording sessions and in the whole process where you know when the song is right? Because I've talked to people, Michael, that have said, you know, you can always do it better, and they just keep trying, but you have to come to draw a line somewhere. Is that Do you have a process?
I've heard someone say one time, and it makes perfect sense. The saying was, is you just you never complete it. You just give up on it, you know. And you have to at some point, because if you keep fine tweezing it, man, I've done that many times. I thought, well, you know, just need to fine tweeze it until I get it there. It's going to be my masterpiece or whatever. And then, you know, of course, those will wind up really hating. And they take so many transformations. Songwriting is not easy. You know, people can, you know, listen to the music, but there are three. They can listen to the music and say, you know, that's, you know, I would have done this or done that on there. They could be right, you know, but it's, they don't know how long it took to just get it into the state where it is with most songs, you know. And most songs on this album are well over 10 years old. They've been in the making for quite a while through the years, because you put them down and you have to get step away from them when it's too much. And you don't want to damage the song, you know. When you're ready, you know.
Yeah, that's an interesting piece. When you were putting the songs together and you were recording it, were you thinking about how it's going to translate when you're playing it live? Sometimes that's something that musicians, you know, when they're laying down the tracks, okay, this is going to sound this way, but we're going to have right. some type of way of representing that. Was that a part of the thought process, Michael?
As far as doing it live, doing the album or the songs that I write live, I'm sorry, you broke up a little bit.
Oh, I'm sorry. When you are writing the when you're in the studio, putting the songs together, are you thinking how they're going to translate live?
Yes, and sometimes no, because I don't want to. I don't want take away from what the song, the way it starts out. If I have any interest in the song whatsoever to start it out, whether that starts out lyrically, in this case lyrically, and if it's saying something in it that is what grabs the person, you know, the listener, off the bat, then, you know, I'll usually keep it in there. But yeah, of course, when these things go on albums, you have to definitely think about how you're going to say this, because sometimes it can be explicit.
That's pretty cool. Let's play another song, because what I like to do, Michael, is put the music into the interview, so that when people are going out and listening to this podcast, they'll hear, you know, the music itself, and then you're you know, talking about the songs, and which I think is really cool. So let's play Generation Next, what I think is released as a single. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes.
We'll talk about that song a little bit before we play it.
I needed something to represent the album. It is a more recent song. I wrote that about a year ago. And I just sat down with a bass guitar and started playing with a pick, you know, on this bass guitar, and came up with this song, you know. I wanted something to represent, like I said, this album, you know, and what it sounds like. People are used to hearing me do one style, you know, but I have other dimensions, you know, and these songs, most of them on the album, have been sitting them to the side, and they're really good songs, but they weren't what people were used to hearing. So this album was, it was fun putting it together, and you can hear it in the production. And, you know, Generation Next is, it's just talking about, you know, the new age that we're living in, the computer age. And I say the new saying should be that the automobile shrunk the nation, and the airplane shrunk the oceans, and the internet shrunk the world. That's really the way it should be at this point, the saying at least. So, you know, it's given more people freedom, and boy, what a bright future this is looking like, you know, for us. It's a great time to live in.
My guest is Michael Grimm. We're going to play a song from his latest release, Grimm, which will be out June 15th. And you can go on Michael's website, michaelgrimmmusic.com, and you can pre-order the album there, and it'll be out this on the 15th. We're going to play a song from the album. This is Generation Next, and we'll be back after this to continue our interview with Michael Grimm. On John Talk Radio. My special guest tonight is Michael Grimm. You can go on Michael's website, michaelgrimmmusic.com. His new release is Grimm. It will be out on June 15th, and we're playing songs from that and talking to Michael about his career and a little, getting to know about these songs and what's going on. And it's just really appreciate you being on the show tonight, Michael. So,
it's my pleasure.
Yeah, this is a lot of fun. Let's talk about one of the things that I think is very interesting is where artists come from and where songwriters, because recently I've been, you know, talking a lot about geography and where people come from and how that influences their songwriting and the way that their music is. And you know, there's Americana music and a lot of things that are roots music that I think is so incredible where, you know, I would ask people that, Michael, like they lived in New York and they would move to Seattle. Was it different for them to write music? Did they have a different way of doing it in because of geography? Now, if you could walk us through like where you grew up and you know like what was like what your life
I grew
was
up
like.
in South. Well, I grew up in South Mississippi, a little town called Waveland in Hancock County.
Okay.
It's the Gulf Coast town. Grew up, you know, singing with my grandmother in church. You know, well, she would play the piano, you know, and I would sing with my sister, gospel hymns, you know, Southern Baptist hymns. And we were just real small because my grandmother raised us. Yeah, I was right there in the crossroads of New Orleans funk. You know, I grew up on country music and bluegrass, you know, mainly the old country music, you know. You know, and Memphis soul, all that Mississippi River music, you know, it definitely influenced me growing up, and not only, you know, as a singer, but yes, in my writing. And I learned, I really got my schooling in writing when I was a teenager, and I went to Nashville and got my first publishing staff writer job. You know, I was writing for a publishing company and earning a weekly salary.
Wow, that's amazing to me. Now, explain to people. I've talked to people, you know, quite a few. I don't know a lot of people, Michael, but some that have done that, have gone to Nashville and they've written songs. Now, I know what it's like to get up in the morning and have to do a job, and you know, you have a job to do, and then you know, you clock in, you clock out. What's it like as a songwriter? I mean, what would a day be like for Michael Grimm when you were in Nashville at that time?
That's a good question. I was enjoying it. I was very happy to, you know, have a job doing something that I was very excited and new at doing, you know, because I was a teenager. Mind you, I got this deal when I was about 17.
Wow.
And so, yeah, it was an adventure.
So did you have to write for, like, certain people? Would they come up and say, hey, somebody needs a song about a dog and something, or how did the whole thing work?
You know, I don't know. They just wanted me to write. You know, they were really training me a lot of times, and they knew that. You know, but they also I guess saw potential enough to hire me, and that's why I say I got my schooling out there sitting with those Nashville writers. And it was collaborations, a lot of collaborations. Nashville loves to collaborate. And you know, when I wasn't collaborating, I was in my bedroom, you know, on the bed with the guitar and pen and paper, you know, pencil and paper, you know.
What were some of the...
Trying to come up with ideas, you know,
yeah.
Just trying to come up with ideas, you know, different things. I don't know, just whatever would hit you, whatever approach I could take. You know, I was really in the boot camp stages of learning to write music, you know, and that was it was tough, but I it was challenging for me. Just trying to find different avenues, and then you're drained, and then you don't want to write anything. Well, you got to learn to step away from it when that happens. Go take a walk, do something else, get your mind off of it, and then come back and sit down and something will hit you.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, because I'm thinking about, you know, how that some, you know, songwriters have told me that the songs, Michael, will just come to them. You know, they'll hear the lyrics, they'll hear the music, it'll be a part, you know, maybe of their subconscious, and they'll hear it that way.
There are people that can do that, and that's, I love writing with those sorts of people, and I myself am not one of those. I admire that, you know, definitely, that anyone that can do that.
Yeah, I can imagine.
It's tough
that...
for me. That's why I say I'm a struggling writer. You know, I've always been.
I can imagine if it was just in my mind thinking about it, Michael, if I was like had to write a song, it would be harder for me to do. And if I was just thinking, okay, you know, this is a cool idea, then I'd be more relaxed. Did you ever run into like, and I, you know, I'm not sure, but did you run into like writer's block where it would be, wow, this is, come on, you know, I can do this. And because, yeah.
Writer's block is very common. Yeah. With me. Yeah. it'll you know. But I've learned to step away from it. Usually my method is just go to another song, you know.
Oh, okay.
Away from that one when it's blocked up. Yeah, and just hit another subject, because clearly you're not thinking about whatever, you know, inspired that subject any longer. And so whatever is flooding your mind for that moment that's distracting you will just kind of lean towards something like that, go towards those ideas and, you know, start writing them.
Now, you said you started singing in the church with your grandma, and a lot of people do that. And do you remember, like, the first times, Michael, that you were in front of people and you were performing or singing or playing? Was that always a comfortable thing for you?
No. I remember when I was singing in church one time, the first time I had a microphone, I believe, in my hand, and I was so nervous, and I was trying to sing, and I remember the preacher coming up in the middle of the song and grabbing the microphone and pushing it a little more towards my mouth because it was so far away, no one could hear me. You know?
Oh, wow. Yep.
No, I remember having stage fright. Today I don't. You know, through the years, I've been doing this for so long now, I long for it, but there are times I get the butterflies in my stomach, you know, and that's what I call them. You know, when I'm playing in front of a crowd of 10,000 to 15,000, say opening for, you know, some of the groups that I've opened for that bring in those sort of crowds, that can be intimidating, you know.
Yeah, and I think that's a perfectly normal way. I've heard, I think it was Tony Bennett that was saying he still gets nervous before every performance. And
you get the butterflies. You definitely want to get up there and start doing your thing, you know.
Yeah, but it's got to be also, Michael, it's got to be such a great feeling when you do get up there and you're singing your music. And the number one, whenever I ask the question of why people do what they do, musicians, you know, it's not an easy thing. And a lot of people don't know that. They think all they see you on stage, you see it, they, oh, well, that looks like a pretty easy job. But it really isn't. But they don't know how much work goes into it. But they always respond back with the reaction they get from the crowd is why they do it. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. If there's one person that's digging it, I'm happy. You know, it tells me I'm doing it right. And you know, for me, I've always used music as a therapy. So I've never had a therapist as a result. You know. Because it works for me in that way. I really do just kind of go into the subject of whatever's going on there and lose myself in the song. And it feels good and it helps me. And people pick up on it, and I like that, you know. They get it. They understand the subject and the emotion, you know, that goes with it. That's what's enjoyable to me about it.
Yeah, well, that's a great point when you talked about that, because – you know, you talked about therapy. When you write things that are in your heart and a part of you, that is a part of therapy, of getting that out. You know, what a therapist will try to do
is just try to
get you to release that. And if you're releasing that through music, that's got to be an amazing thing. Plus the fact that it's rewarding to the listener, because in my opinion and through my, you know, journey through music is like, there can be all kinds of different sounds, like you were talking about when you grew up in Mississippi and all the different things going on, the different types of music, just an amazing amount of influences. But what separates it for me is the music that is played from the heart. And if it's played from person, then you can, I mean, it can be bluegrass, it can be soul music. Yeah, it can be anything.
And in all of those fields, that's the one thing in all of those genres of music, that's the one thing that I learned a long time ago. And I think I learned it when I had my first broken heart as a teenager. And I learned that all of those genres have that. If you listen, you can find those artists that are soulful, you know, coming from the heart. Songs and singers, the way they deliver these songs. Country music taught me that. Though growing up listening to George Jones, you know, he's so soulful. He just cries when he's singing, and it really does come from the heart. And then listening to Otis Redding, you know, sing, you know, or Ray Charles, and you know, those, all of those, man, that's what inspired me more than anything, I think, to sing was after my first broken heart and listening to those songs that were coming from all directions, where I was, where I grew up, you know.
Yeah, you said Otis Redding. You just can't get any better than Otis Redding.
That is correct. I'm a huge Otis fan. Absolutely.
When I was growing up here in this small town in Ohio, we had a pretty interesting thing happen to us here. I don't know, 4,000 or 5,000 people, and this one family moved into town, and one guy was. He knew every soul record that was out there, and he would teach us all this stuff, you know, Otis Redding, Wilson Pickett, and all of these amazing artists that we didn't really know too much about. We didn't hear on the radio that much,
mm-hmm.
and had that deep appreciation of, you know, what soul music was and what it was like for people to just sing from their heart. And I think that's something I hear in your music, Michael, which I think separates you from a lot of music, is that heartfelt, the lyrics, and just that. I know when you're singing a song, you can tell that you're really, it's coming from somewhere deep inside. So that's really a plus, and so that's really cool. So, it's not easy to do, because in this day and age, you know, I hear a lot of what'll happen. People will send me music and I'll hear it and I'll think, gosh, that's good, but I've heard it before, and it's mm-hmm. there's nothing really.
You're not being sold, you know, on what's being told or being sung. Yeah,
right.
I get it. I hear a lot of that. We hear it all over the radio these days,
yeah.
you know, with songs that are like that, you know, but I sympathize with all of those writers and people in the business. You know, I know how hard it is to write these songs. And so, yeah.
Well, let's play another song from the album. I like to play Goodbye Sammy. Could you talk about that?
That song is I had a guitar named Sammy. It was a Stratocaster. Came up missing. So, you know, it's kind of heartbreaking to me. And wrote a song about it.
You know, if people aren't musicians, they have no idea how connected musicians are to their guitars. It's like,
oh yeah.
I was playing once with this band, and we were loading up. This has been some years back, and the guy put his Strat in the truck and went back into the place, and it was gone. And to this day, that's been a long time ago. We still
I've had it happen to me a few times, man. Yeah, it's heartbreaking.
And you just think, oh man, it's like almost like one of your kids being taken.
Well, if it's a guitar that you really like too, you know, and you broke it in well, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. My guest tonight is Michael Grimm. You can go on Michael's website, michaelgrimmmusic.com. We're playing songs from his newest release, A Grimm, which will be out there, available on June 15th. And let's play. This is Goodbye Sammy, and this is Michael's tribute to one of his guitar that went away. We'll be right back after this.
Goodbye, Sammy. Goodbye. Notice that the hurt is gone.
Goodbye, Sammy. That's from Michael Grimm's latest release, Grimm, which will be released on June the 15th. So, Michael, let's talk a little bit about what's going on. What are some of the projects and things that you're working on now? I know that the record release is a big thing. What else is going on in Michael Grimm's career right now?
You know, it's just been working on that album and now working on well, we just started a new show out here in Vegas at the Hard Rock Casino, at the Vinyl Room, and putting that show together was a lot. I must say, you know, I love playing music, and I'm glad that I'm very honored actually to be playing at the Hard Rock. But after all of this stuff that's been going on recently, I need to go dip my feet in the sand on some beach somewhere for a day or two. It would be nice, but no, burning the candle at both ends. But it's brighter to see with.
That's good. I never heard that. That's pretty good. So when you're doing the shows at the Hard Rock, what all do you incorporate in your show? I mean, you put some of the new albums, some of the older stuff. How do you do that? And do you have to change that up like every other night, or how does that work? I'm just curious.
No, you know, I mean, for right now we have two different sets. Go by, you know, and it's just one set each night except for Saturday. But we switched the sets up, and they're all my originals, you know, most of them at least. There's a few songs that people remember when I was on America's Got Talent that I put into the show. But for the most part, you know, it's just getting up there and singing from the heart and having a good time with the audience. I do love to talk to them, you know, and have one-on-ones with them because, you know, they're good people. They come out and see my show. I just have a good time. Yeah. I think everybody has a good time when they come out. It's a great band I'm playing with, a group of guys.
Yeah. Yeah, that really helps. Now, talk a little bit about America's Got Talent. What I mean, you won, that was huge, and that had to be such an amazing thing. Talk about that a little bit for the audience and what it was like
being on the show. It was a lot. It was, you know, I could try to explain it to you, but I you'd have to really experience it. It was beyond belief. You know, I've never experienced anything like that. It was much bigger than I, you know. That's the best I could put it.
How was it?
It was fun.
Like,
it was fun.
How was it preparing for the when you had to sing? I mean, was there a lot of preparation that went into that? And was,
oh, yes.
I mean, you're on big time national TV with millions of people watching. Was that something, Michael, that was conscious that you're thinking of that, or were you just like, hey, I'm just up here singing? You know, it's going to be like me singing.
It was like an outer body experience when I was on. It really was. I don't know if it's because I've seen the TV footage of it, but I feel like, you know, every time I think about it, I can't put myself back into my body. I see myself at a distance. It really was an out of body sort of experience, or memory at least. It was, like I say, it was bigger than me. So I can't recall so much of what I was thinking on stage. I was just going with the flow for the most part. I know that. You know, just doing the songs that I was inspired by, and you know, having the best time I could. I had no clue I was going to go to the end of the show, you know, and then, you know, win it. You know, that was that's still very bizarre to look back and think about.
So what was it like? I mean, before that and after, how did things change?
Well, made me a stronger person, I do believe. It let me know that if I can put up with, you know, getting up in those hours and doing that from early morning to early morning, you know, and keep going like that, then I'm going to sustain in this business, you know, for a long time.
Yeah.
It helped me get my name out there, you know, without a doubt. And as long as Jackie Ivanko is going to superstardom, which she is, I can always say that I stood next to her, you know, on that stage. It's a lot of great things that came after the winning of the show, and, you know, a lot of heartaches and, you know, a lot of equally bad things, you know, here and there. I wouldn't say equally, you know, because that was a real good time, you know, after the show. But it was going a lot. I was just going everywhere constantly and flying. I didn't even know what city I was in from day to day, you know, after the album. I mean, after the show. But it was fun.
Yeah, well, that's got to be interesting because, you know, working as a songwriter and coming from, you know, where you came from, you know, Mississippi, and then getting to where the big stage and reaching it, was it like you thought it would be? And then, like you're saying, well, they're flying
no.
you around and you're...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It wasn't like what I thought it would be, you know. But I think I forgot about... Really, I just forgot about what I used to think about, you know, that would be, you know what I'm trying to say,
yep.
One day. Once I reached that moment, it was, I thought I could prepare for it my whole life, but it was overwhelming. I don't know how, just overwhelming.
Well, you know, I think that when you're growing up and you're singing, when you were talking about, you know, the time when you were at the church singing and first time you were singing, when you feel confidence, because that's what you portrayed on the stage during that you portrayed confidence in yourself and in your music. Do you think that was an easy thing to come to have that confidence? Because I think that's one of the things that convinced people, man, this guy really believes in what he's doing.
Well, you know, I mean, I've been doing this for 25 years now, since I was 12 years old. I'm going on 25 anyway, but I, you know, I've been singing these songs for so long, you know, and I think that's what was showing, if there was anything. I was very confident in what I was singing because I've been singing, you know, by that point, I've been singing those particular songs well over 10 years, you know, on stage out here in Vegas almost every night, you know, since 2001, you know, out here. So that's probably where that came from.
So, you know, we just got a couple minutes left, and I just want to say thanks, Michael. I really think your album is awesome. I really enjoy it, and I hope, I just, you know, wish the best for you.
Thank you, John.
What's your take right now on, I know this is kind of a big question, but if we can kind of boil it down, on the music industry right now, because we talked a little bit about that, but you talked about the internet and how that, you know, it has made the world so much smaller. And how
it has, and it's definitely destroyed the what was known as what we knew as the music industry, what it used to be.
Right.
But it on the flip side, it's given so many opportunities for people to do things away from the labels, you know, and get recognition on things like YouTube and, you know, everything that becomes viral out there. It's amazing to see where it's going, and it's been a great tool for me. But then again, on the flip side, you know, I came into the business in the later 90s, and that's right when the internet was starting to really become popular in everyone's houses. And it, I think it was Napster, was making it very
right.
tough on anyone to get a deal. And so the labels really just stopped doing the developmental programs that they used to do for artists to make a good album for that artist, and started looking out on the internet. And really, that's what they're doing. And it's a different thing. But I don't have to rely upon a label, one of those major labels, And I always thought that I would be on the radio, signed with a major label. That would be my career, if I could get there. It's been a struggle. I went and tried out for that TV show, just thinking maybe I could get on there. And I got on there. And that really, though I'm not the radio celebrity, I'm the reality TV guy. It's still people understand that I am a musician, and I still have those fans from the show, and I'm so grateful, for that, to still have all of them.
Well, Michael, it's been great talking to you. I really appreciate it. I hope that everything goes well. I'm sure it will, and the new album is great. Is there anything you'd like to say to the fans or to the people listening, or anything maybe I missed?
No, just that I love them all. Thank you, and come out and see me in Las Vegas at the Hard Rock Casino, the Vinyl Room, 8:00, Friday, Saturdays, and Sundays, and I'll be out to see everybody after the show. We'll have a great time. And I want to thank everybody for everything. Without them, I would not be where I am. So, fact.
Well, thanks a lot, Michael, and we really appreciate you being on. And I thank everybody for listening to John Talk Radio tonight. And everybody have a great evening. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you.
You walked on water when I was a kid. Amazed I could have you as long as I did. I wanted you longer, but heaven forbid. And so the wind blows, and so the wind blows that wore down the great pyramids. And so the wind blows, and so the wind blows, as lonely can get. Light, but we were two ships just passing by. Inside the shadows of the twilight, and so the wind blows, and so the wind blows, bitterness taking a bite.
So long.
my ship is lost out at sea. As we lay you down beneath the oak tree, and so the wind blows, and so the wind blows, spirit finally set free. And so the wind blows, and so the wind blows, bringing you softly to me. Breathe.